The world we know is changing. Welcome to Biotech Nation. Today on Biotech Nation, we talk about what biotech has been working on for diseases which primarily affect young boys, from hemophilia to Duchenne muscular dystrophy. First up is Paul Perreault, the CEO of CSL. I was reminded that not all biotech companies were founded in the last 10 to 20 years. CSL has been around for quite some time.
Oh, that's right. We have our 100-year anniversary coming up next year. Started in 1916 in Australia as part of the Australian government.
And what was it supposed to do back then?
Well, they were actually founded to supply flu vaccine for the Australian population during the Spanish pandemic. So that's what the government said, well, it's a long way to Australia and we better supply the population here with what we need or else there'll be too many deaths from the pandemic flu.
At that point, it was a part of the Australian government. Or it was owned by the Australian government, right?
That's correct. Owned and run by the Australian government up until 1994. And then in 1994, the company was privatized and then taken public and listed on the Australian Stock Exchange.
And here you are, the CEO, sitting in Pennsylvania. How did that work out? How did we get here?
That's a good question. CSL is really a global company, and a lot of our business these days is outside of Australia. Australia is a wonderful place, and I'm there quite a bit because my corporate headquarters are there. I do have a home in Pennsylvania. But actually, the company's headquarters for our corporate entity is in Melbourne, Australia. And so I'm in Australia about 100 days a year, about a third of my time, about a third in the U.S. and about a third in the rest of the world because we operate plants all over the globe. We have plants in Australia, in Switzerland, in Germany, in the U.K., and in the U.S.
Now, what do you do today? What is CSL all about?
So our main business today is really in rare diseases and plasma and recombinant proteins. And so,
what does that mean to the average person?
So to the average person, people have probably heard of hemophilia, hereditary bleeding. The gene is passed by the mother to the boys, and the boys contract hemophilia. There are some spontaneous hemophilia that arises in the population, very few. But hemophilia is less than 1% of the total population. So it is a rare disease. In the U.S., for instance, about 20,000 patients with hemophilia. And there are two types of hemophilia. You have hemophilia A and hemophilia B. And basically the difference is the clotting factor or that protein in your blood and plasma that causes the blood to clot. One is factor 8, which is the main hemophilia A population. The factor 9 is a deficiency in hemophilia B. And these factors, or coagulation clotting factors, are numerous in our blood and in our plasma. And so what we do is we actually make plasma-derived factor 8 and factor 9. So we collect plasma at plasma collection centers in the U.S. We have about 120 plasma collection centers in the U.S. And we take that plasma, we test it, we purify it, we filter it, and we separate the proteins, the factor 8, the factor 9, as well as many other proteins that I'll speak about in just a moment, to actually put those products back into patients to prevent the bleeding. So that's the one aspect of our business, these plasma proteins that we separate from human plasma. Recombinant proteins are similar, except they're not made from plasma. They're made from cells that we multiply through
We
engineer and multiply and make factors that way. And we're actually have just submitted a recombinant factor 9 to the FDA. And we have some data coming out next Monday at the International Society of Thrombosis and Hemostasis in Toronto, which will show the benefit that we've submitted to the FDA and hope to have approval by the end of this year.
So what do your new products do, these recombinant engineered proteins?
So they do the same basic thing as the plasma-derived proteins, except they don't come from a human source. And so some people think about human source and say, well, you could have a potential for a virus or a contamination. All these proteins are very well purified, tested, and they're very safe. But the recombinant proteins have the benefit of having long extended half-life. So you can actually reduce the number of doses that somebody needs, and it helps with prophylaxis. So instead of just
prophylaxis is?
Prophylaxis is treating the patient before the bleed occurs. So because hemophilia particularly is mostly is 99.9% boys, and if you have
young boys,
they run around. They want to participate in golf and baseball and be active. And it actually helps prepare their joints and muscles if they do have a bleed. But you want to give the factor before they get on the bus and go to school, because if they have a bleed while they're at school and then they have to be taken to the hospital, the ER, or they have to go home and infuse this factor, it becomes very difficult. And so if you prophylax and give it ahead of time, then you know, you're able to sustain if you do get a bleed. You don't have the serious nature of the bleed that you would have if you just had on-demand therapy, which is just giving the therapy when there's a bleed.
Do you need humans to contribute blood for your new products?
No. So this is made in cells that we engineer in our labs. So we don't need the plasma for that. But in many parts of the world, there are patients that can't afford the recombinant therapies, and there's still a lot of plasma-derived therapies being used because we're able to proficiently extract these proteins, and we can manufacture at a lower cost than the recombinants. So the recombinant therapy is really for, I would say, Europe, U.S., and the emerging countries are still a lot using plasma-derived proteins as well as just on-demand therapy. They're not even doing prophylaxis yet.
This is the reality of the world.
It is. And so we're trying to take that message through. There's probably, in China, for instance, around 75,000 hemophiliacs, but there's only about 5,000 on the national register today. So there's a lot of patients going untreated or not treated at all, or they're only getting it when they have a severe bleed. And that also can cause trouble if they don't get treatment soon enough.
With the engineered treatment, it's technology, so better, faster, cheaper over time. Do you think it will eventually overtake the plasma product?
Well, certainly one of the hardest things we do in the business is to collect plasma. That's a very hard thing to get donors consistently coming into your plasma collection centers and to collect the plasma, to freeze it, to test it, and put it through. So from a throughput perspective, the volume that we can get from a recombinant batch is much better than what it takes to collect the plasma and less costly over time. But we have to build the facilities. We have to, you know, we're building a brand new facility in Switzerland right now to supply all of our recombinant factor 8 that we're submitting shortly to the FDA, our factor 9, and follow on recombinant proteins as well.
Well, you started out 100 years ago with the Spanish flu. Are you still in the pandemic business?
Well, we are in the flu business. We recently announced that we were acquiring the Novartis flu vaccine business.
Oh, yeah.
And so that deal will close sometime this year. And we will become the second largest producer of flu vaccine in the world. And so we did have and do have a manufacturing facility for flu in Australia. Because, again, that's where we started. So it's not the same facility and it's not the same people as 100 years ago. But we have evolved a bit since then. And the Novartis facility has scale that really allows us to participate on a global basis and be a real player in flu. We do have pandemic contracts with the U.S., with BARDA, the biosecurity group of HHS, as well as the U.K. government and the Australian government. So we do pandemic research and preparedness, as well as seasonal flu, which we will be producing going forward.
Well, Paul, you're a really, really, really busy guy. In the last 5 years, has there been any year where you didn't get a flu shot?
No. In fact, I get two every year.
You get two.
I get one for the Southern Hemisphere and one for the Northern Hemisphere.
Oh, that's right. Two different flus.
That's correct.
Well, if you believe in it, I believe in it.
How's
that? Hey, thank you so much. Come back. Keep us updated, won't you?
Thank you, Dr. Gunn.
Paul Perreault is the CEO of CSL. More information is available on the web at csl.com.au. An Australian company. Let's remember its web address is csl.com.au. Speaking with Shane Kovacs, the CFO of PTC Therapeutics, I asked him to remind us, what is Duchenne muscular dystrophy?
Duchenne is a genetic disorder. It's an X-linked genetic disorder, which means it primarily affects young boys. It's probably the most severe form of muscular dystrophy. And the boys get the disease as a result of a lack of the ability to produce a certain protein called dystrophin. And dystrophin is a protein that lines the membrane of all of your muscle fibers. And it's almost like a spring, and it's a structural protein, and it allows the muscle fiber to withstand the stress of expansion and contraction of the muscle fiber. In the absence of the protein, and these boys don't have the protein, the muscle fibers are much more susceptible to damage. And so just with regular activities, they're constantly damaging their muscle tissue and losing muscle mass. And it tends to you tend to identify these boys at a pretty young age, usually between 3 and 5 years of age, because they're developmentally delayed. They're slow to become walkers, and you tend to have a funny gait as they go up the stairs and whatnot. And it affects first the lower skeletal muscles, but ultimately these boys become wheelchair bound, usually when they're around the age of 10. And ultimately the disease progresses to the upper skeletal muscles, and then ultimately the respiratory and cardiac muscle, and these boys die a premature death usually in their mid-20s.
It's horrific.
Yeah, it's really terrible.
Horrific condition. Now, we've covered several efforts that have been trying to make progress in this area, but what I'm very interested in PTC Therapeutics about is you're trying to do something here with the underlying cause. What is the underlying cause?
Yeah, the underlying cause is the inability to produce this protein dystrophin because they have a mutation in the gene that makes that protein.
Just a random mutation.
There's a number of different mutations that can lead to the loss of the expression of that protein. We're working on a very specific mutation, which is a subset of the boys with Duchenne. It's about 13% on average, and that's called a nonsense mutation. Which is a mutation, which is a single point alteration in the DNA that changes the coding in that DNA and in the messenger RNA from coding for a specific amino acid to now coding for a stop. It's almost like putting a period in the middle of a sentence. And so as the cellular machinery is trying to read that sentence, it stops the sentence prematurely and terminates early. And so you don't produce a full protein.
What did you do?
Well, the company was actually founded 17 years ago by our CEO and scientific founder, Stuart Peltz, who was studying this area of biology and specific these types of mutations called nonsense mutations. And the discovery of our lead drug, Translarna, it's interesting because its mechanism of action, the way that it works, is it binds to the cellular machinery, not to the DNA or the RNA. And when the cellular machinery called the ribosome is reading along the RNA and making the protein, normally when it hits this premature stop codon, it stops and lets the protein go early. Our drug binds to that cellular machinery and tricks effectively the cellular machinery to insert an amino acid at that stop and keep going along reading the rest of the RNA to make the full protein.
Sort of like a patch. we used to say there's a patch in your operating system. Here's a little patch in your...
Yeah,
it's a little patch
in there. It's interesting. So it inserts one amino acid at that stop, keeps going to make the full protein. And what's really interesting about this drug is it has the potential to treat any nonsense mutation. So it's not necessarily specific to Duchenne. Duchenne's the first indication we're working on, but we're also working on cystic fibrosis and a whole host of other different genetic disorders that are the result of a nonsense mutation.
All right. Let's say that you get good results this fall for Duchenne. How long before people can get it?
Yeah. You know, what's really interesting to that question is we actually got an early approval in Europe about a year ago. So we've already begun commercializing and getting this drug to the boys in Europe and actually in a bunch of countries outside of Europe. We're now shipping to over 9 countries now, and ultimately we'll continue to roll out throughout this year. It's in the U.S. where the FDA has asked for us to do this extra study. And so that's the mitigating factor to getting it to the boys here, which we anticipate with a positive study we could be launching in the first half of next year.
Which would be 2016.
2016.
Spring of 2016. What's been the results in the other countries where it's approved?
What we're trying to do is preserve the existing healthy tissue effectively so that the healthy tissue to add the protein and increase its ability to withstand the stress that it would otherwise not be able to. Once the tissue has gone fatty and fibrotic, you're never going to be able to rescue that tissue. So the older the boys are, the more they've lost some of their tissue that you're not going to be able to rescue. So clearly the earlier the better in terms of the treatment. That being said, you still want to try and preserve what the boys have. And so ultimately, we want to try and treat all of the boys, including the young ones, the ones that are still ambulatory, and ultimately even the boys that are non-ambulatory to still preserve what function they have maybe in their upper limbs.
And that's going forward, that we're getting results there.
Yeah. We have lots of great anecdotal stories and feedback from patients, from the physicians, from the boys in terms of, the impact on their activities of daily living in terms of boys are being able to ride their bike to boys being able to stand up in the shower and wash themselves or use the bathroom their own or even boys that are in a wheelchair to be able to use their computer or their wheelchair better. We get that all the time. You know, today we've got over 400 boys, probably pushing through 500 boys now on drug, either in our clinical studies or on commercial reimbursed access. So we've actually got a large number of these boys already on the drug, and the goal is to ultimately to bring it to all of them globally.
Shane Kovacs is the CFO of PTC Therapeutics. More information is available on the web at ptcbio.com. For Biotech Nation, I'm Moira Gunn.
Tech Nation and its regular segment Biotech Nation are produced at the studios of KQED-FM in San Francisco. Executive producer is Matt Gardner. The director of technical production is Monte Carlos. And audio engineers include Howard Gelman, Seal Mahler, and Larry Upton. Our theme music was composed by Ann Nachtrieb-Zesiger and Robert Powell, with title creation provided by NameLab Incorporated of San Francisco. Program information and internet audio is available on the web at technation.com. Tech Nation and Biotech Nation are productions of Tech Nation Media. I'm Paul Landcore.